All right. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Blindside Blitz. I am Jim McPhee, and alongside of me is Mr. Joe DiCapita.
What's going on, Blitz Nation? Welcome back. Yes, we are back again, once again, every single week for you guys, talking more football. Yes, I know it's been a long hiatus so far. Like, we've got through OTAs. You know, we're kind of crawling through the lull of the offseason, but we're going to get there, guys. It's right. I can see the horizon now. It's right there in the distance. We're going to get there. Join us every single week, every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern. This is the place to be. Listen, we're the most interactive NFL talk show you're going to find. We want you to drop down in the comments. Let us know you're here. If you have any questions, drop them down below. If you got any opinions about what we're about to talk about, we got several great topics to talk about and bring to you guys. And it's not the same whole jargon that you hear from mass media where they're like, hey, who wears the most Nike shoes on a team? No, it's nothing ridiculous like that. We're going to give you just real, legit football topics every single week. And, hey, we're brought to you by – you might have seen the logo in the beginning of the intro. If you haven't, it's grumblingsmedia.com. Head over to the website there. They have other podcasts, not just our great podcast. They have other great podcasts there, too. You can get your sports, entertainment, political shows, anything like that is over there as well. You can also follow us anywhere you get your podcasts, Apple, Google, Spotify, and Pandora, baby. Let's go.
Oh, man, you're on top of it tonight, Joe. Absolutely.
I'm fired up.
I love it. I love the promo.
Just like our show, fired up.
Yeah, fired up. Nice cross promotion there. All right, so yeah, a lot of different stuff going on right now, but we just found out, too, now the NFL has created new comeback player guidelines now.
So that's
comeback
right.
Player of the Year guidelines now for the NFL. And, you know, this has come under, you know, controversy, especially after last year when DeMar Hamlin was not voted in and Joe Flacco, who was – just sitting on his couch and happened to, you know, because of so many injuries here at the quarterback position for the Cleveland Browns, he ends up getting called in to play and only played, what, five games?
Five games, yeah.
He threw 1,616 yards with 13 touchdowns, which isn't bad, too.
It's really good.
So, it's
really
and good. And helped did his job, propel them into the playoffs, you know, and came up short, but – it's a good story for Joe Flacco, but that's the thing, though. Everybody was kind of looking at this and said, how did DeMar Hamlin not win this? Because dude, back, you know, in 2023, January 2nd, I think it was, when he was playing, they were playing the Cincinnati Bengals here in Cincinnati, goes down, cardiac arrest, you know, possibly dying on the field, and comes back last year to play a couple of special teams. I think it was like 96 plays and special teams and so forth. And so he's back playing, you know, so he's not even expected to come back to be in football, and he is there. So, I mean, that's the great story. And so many people came to social media, including Peter King and whatnot, to say that, hey, this is, you know, preposterous that this has happened, you know, that Joe Flacco. And I kind of felt the same, at least to an extent, that Joe Flacco, like, really? That's the comeback player? It's like, it just didn't make any sense to me.
Well, to me, it makes a little bit more sense than most people. The Comeback Player of the Year award has always been traditionally about either a player coming back from either a declining year or an injury that they battled back from, and then the following year, they have a breakout year again. Like, that to me is the epitome of the Comeback Player of the Year. Now, I understand the sticking point, too, is everyone is pointing their fingers about DeMar Hamlin. And, yes, is it an amazing feat that he was able to – he wasn't even supposed to play anymore, let alone he might not even be able to walk. They were talking about him not even being able to function by himself. So it is an amazing blessing on DeMar Hamlin for him to not only be able to come back and be able to function as a human being, but also – even be able to come back and play this very violent football game. So, yes, is it a huge feat? Of course it is. It's amazing. It's uncanny. Like, DeMar Hamlin, everybody was praying for him to not only just get better, but also if there was a chance for him to come back and be able to play this great game that we love. So, amazing. And does DeMar Hamlin definitely need to have an award? I think he deserves one, but my sticking point about all this is I can see it from both sides. Is like, traditionally, the Comeback Player of the Year award has always been about, like I said before, declining or injury season, the season prior, and then all of a sudden they bounce back the following year and they have a breakout year. That's deserving of the Comeback Player of the Year. Now, we're manipulating and changing this rule to kind of squeeze in another additional opinion where if you can come back from a catastrophic injury to return and play football, not about can you return and play football and play it at a high level and have a great year. It's just about can you come back and play it in the game. The Damar Hamlin, I thought, was a tremendous talent before the injury, before that the very, you know, darkening type of situation that happened, that transpired. He was on his way to becoming a starting safety for the Bills and was really kind of taken off. But then, obviously, bad things happened. Now he fought through it. He came back. Tremendous, tremendous feat. But are we getting too crazy with all these changes? Are we getting now with awards? My thing too is you have had this comeback player award by itself for so long, and now all of a sudden, because some people are getting a rise from it and saying, oh, well, Damar Hamlin deserved it. Did he deserve an award? Yes. Comeback player of the year? Could be, but they could also just make another award for players like that. That just overcome a traumatic situation to come back to the sport and be able to play, you could create a whole other award for that. I think now that you're throwing into the equation here of now, is it going to be just about an injury, a catastrophic injury that happens, and then that player comes back and is able to play, maybe not at a high level, but he's at least able to play. Now, is the comeback player of the year award going to always go to now those type of players and not so much of what this award was originally created for?
Mm-hmm. And it's weird, though, because even if you look at past winners, it's spotty, because if you look back a few years ago, Joe Burrow won, and now it's coming back after, you know, an early injury early in his career to mm-hmm. where he wasn't even able to really play much. So then he comes back, and look, he did well. You know, Jamar Chase with him and, you know, lit it up the league, and then mm-hmm. the Bengals make it far deep into the playoffs. So I can see both sides, like you said, kind of as well. And I think it's understandable too, because when you talk about somebody that, you know, underachieves or whatever, or what you might think of them, or a down season, and then all of a sudden is mm-hmm. playing, it leaves everything open to interpretation again. So that everybody has a different interpretation of certain players. Some players might have already thought that this player was good. You look at Joe Burrow, like, oh, this guy, you know, if he didn't get injured, we'll mm-hmm. say, right, and then all of a sudden didn't put up great numbers, but then the next season does. And people already thought Joe Burrow was going to be great. They're like, oh, he just finally – he hit his stride now. Here he is. It's not exactly a comeback player.
No, that's not a comeback player.
No, but I mean, when you look at Geno Smith, especially here, a lot of people might have thought certain opinions about Geno Smith. But
a lot of people had opinions about him.
About being terrible. It's like, yeah, come back. Exactly. But come back from what? He didn't come back from anywhere. He was never high. He was never very good. And then he just kind of just came out a little bit, had a good year. I mean,
he had a really good year.
But I'm just saying, it wasn't come back from anything. He never came back from nothing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but that's part of this award, too. It hasn't been always about just injury, and then you come back and have a great year. It's also had about a declining year. Or that guy had no expectations.
No expectations, but
that's the thing. He had no expectations, and then boom, breakout year. So yeah, that's typically like kind of like a breakout year. So it kind of fits into the guidelines of that award. So mm-hmm. I mean, for my thinking, and I'm having a hard time with this, as you can tell.
Yeah.
Is because I don't want this award to just go to just injured players now that happen to come back and play a few snaps that have been able to come back. Todd Gurley. And if anybody remembers Todd Gurley, he had reconstructive surgery around his knee. And a lot of doctors said, you're never going to be able to run in the NFL again. But he kept working and working. He fought his way back. He jumped onto the Atlanta Falcons at one point. He jumped onto another team to kind of elongate his career, but he was never the same. He never could deliver that explosion that he once had as a running back. But he did come back from a catastrophic injury, and that could be deemed as now currently a comeback player, mm-hmm. but just because he came back from injury. So I think if they were going to tweak this rule like they have already, my worry is going forward is that anytime there's a catastrophic injury or a very serious injury, doesn't matter if you have a big name or not, and you're able to fight through it and come back the next year just to play for your team, whether you're a starter, backup, rotational player, those are the guys that are going to get it from now on. Because the production part seems like they're kind of pushing that to the side a little bit and saying, well, you know, DeMar Hamlin, definitely comeback player. Does he deserve awards? Sure. But I would have been more okay with creating a new award, and you could call it the Hamlin Award. It could be in, you know, it could be an honor for him, because I don't know about, I don't think something that, like that kind of situation has happened before in the NFL's history, where a dude, an athlete was literally dead on the field, brought back to life, told he wasn't going to be able to play or walk or even halfway function, get over all of that, all jump over those hurdles, and then still was able to get cleared and come back and play the game. I don't think that's ever going to happen again. So it's like Hamlin is a rarity. Like, this doesn't happen. So why not honor him and his family and say, here's the Hamlin Award. And from now on, every time, every year, if something,
something was to happen,
whether it be injury riddled or something like that, you come back from it, you get the Hamlin Award.
I hear you there. That could be an interesting thing to way to look at it. Here you go. Here's the exact quote from Rob Matty, AP senior NFL writer and All-Pro in NFL Awards voting overseer. He says, the spirit of the AP Comeback Player of the Year Award is to honor a player who has demonstrated resilience in the face of adversity by overcoming illness, physical injury, or other circumstances that led him to miss playing time the previous season. So there's clarity, too. So, again, like you said, now they've completely changed it. If that is, I would say if he was quoted saying, in addition to, have a down year and then coming back and playing well, also look into illness, physical injury, and other circumstances that might have kept him off the field. You know what I mean? Because that encompasses everything. Because, again, like you said, this sounds like a specific, like, hey, if they miss time and they come back somehow and people didn't expect it, they've got it or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's definitely something to look at. If you want to look at the numbers here quick in voting, Flacco won with 151 points. He had 13 first-place votes.
Which I don't know what that means.
Basically, you get a certain amount of points.
Like the panel,
first place, second, third, out of all the
votes. I'm not talking about points. I'm talking about the first place votes. So, like, how many people are voting in this thing?
I don't know how many people voted, but I don't think it's a lot. I think it's a handful. The AP writers, whatever the AP writers are, sort of like, you know, with the when you can vote for the Heisman. DeMar Hamlin had 21 first place votes. But you see, he had more votes there, but again, more points by Flacco because there, I think 8 voters left Hamlin off their ballot completely.
Right.
So he didn't get any points for any of those. So he might have won all ultimately, but being the fact that he was left off a lot of their ballots. And again, maybe they thought the way you did though, too. They're like, why does an injured player to come back have to get one here? You know, because again,
I'm still confused though, because DeMar Hamlin had more first place votes. So wouldn't that be worth more points?
A certain amount of points, but not all together, because it must be, again, first place must be 5 points, second place 3, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
So if 8 other people voted Joe Flacco for second or whatever, he ended up getting, you know, another 24 points on top of that.
So
you
it's
know
like
what I'm
a
saying?
Tiered system.
So he might have won 151 to 21 or something like that. You know, so he just didn't get enough.
But there was 8 people that left DeMar Hamlin completely off their
off, so he didn't get any points at all. When Flacco, even if he was voted for fourth or whatever it ends up being, got points still. You know what I'm saying? So I think that
I get it.
Maybe they changed who votes for it. I don't know. Or, you know, who knows how it goes.
I think with this change, though, I don't think it's for the better. That's what I'm worried about, is because now this award is going to completely change the point of view. You know, how people think about this award now is going to definitely change, and it has to now, because now you have all these different elements put in and crammed right into this award. Too many variables now to get a clear-cut winner. It's not like, oh, comeback player of the year. Oh, yeah, it was definitely Joe Flacco. Because Joe Flacco, he came off – those 5 games were great. He put up great stats for 5 games. got them to the playoffs. Okay, you can consider it kind of like a comeback play of the year because he was injured and all that and hasn't played well for a few years. Okay, I get that. But then DeMar Hamlin definitely overcame some great feats for sure. And for him to be back playing is amazing. I think he deserves his own award.
Yeah, sure. And I think it's just even the fact that it was Joe Flacco who only played five games. That's what really did it. I mean, there should maybe be a certain amount of games back or something too, possibly. Because I could see the other ones. Again, former ones, Joe Burrow, T.J. Watt. And right under T.J. Watt, when he was voting, it was Adrian Peterson. And Adrian Peterson, again, had an electric year having that, you know, Achilles tear or whatever and coming back miraculously.
Yeah, in a short amount of time.
Yeah, a short amount of time. So, I mean, injury, coming back from injury and playing. So they have voted for these types of guys before. But and then Ryan Tannehill was voted one a few years ago back, too. And I don't think he was coming back from injury, but the fact that he – was basically when he went to Tennessee to try and salvage his career because not being sold in on the guy in Miami, they were done with him. Like, this guy just ain't who he thought he was. And then all of a sudden did great for Tennessee and the Titans. So that was big for him. So you see it go two different ways. So I think it's all about interpretation. But I think, like I said, if this guy said it to where include this part in it and this isn't what it's all about, which that might be what he means or what he meant when he said it, but just didn't say it that way.
Yeah, I just think now it's going to be confusing for a lot of people voting going forward.
Yeah. Who knows? And I think there people are going to pick favorites as it goes too.
Yeah, there's going to be uproar every year about this award.
Exactly.
That's what's going to happen.
It goes. Yep. Definitely. So okay. So that was some new things here with the NFL, and we're going to see some of this stuff pop out too as the off season and the training camp start to start up, different headlines and such. Mm-hmm. Another thing that popped up too is now rule changes. NFL announced rule change for players returning from injury reserve in 2024 as well. Joe, what do you think about that now?
So it's basically an expansion of the rule. Mm-hmm. You're allowed two extra votes, but for the postseason, it's 10 total votes for the whole season, but two of those are allocated for postseason where you can have IR players return to your roster. During the regular season, it's still eight. That's your cutoff point. You can only do up to eight. You can, however, the same player can go back on IR two times a year, but that also counts against that number. Just because it's the same player that you're putting on doesn't mean it doesn't count again. So you have those eight times you can put players on the IR during the regular season. You got two players in the postseason that you can put IR and have them return. So I like it. I think it's good because, listen, in a injury-riddled league where it's so violent and so – we see the injury numbers pile up every single year. Now that NFL's trying to do their best in terms of safety, you know, we see them changing the rules all the time every single year and adding different equipment and all that. So – but now they're allowing teams that, especially that make the postseason, they get they can add a couple guys back to the roster during the playoffs, and that's going to help them in their longevity in the postseason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I see that when players when they're designated to return, they also must remain on the reserve list for four games.
Just like it's always been.
Yeah, and then after a player is cleared for practice, they have 21-day window.
Yep.
So
same deal.
That's big for some teams heading into the playoffs where we've seen a lot of teams
look at the Miami Dolphins.
Get those problems in the playoffs and not be able to have some more guys because you have to have a cutdown day during right when you hit the playoffs anyway. So that's going to be big to have those two extra spots at least. And, you know, we've seen this now too, and even what they do with the quarterback now and having that designated – backup to a backup, you know, third or fourth string quarterback.
We're just adding more options.
So we're just giving teams more options. So, and I think that the NFL is trying to do this so they can have a better quality when it comes to playoff time and see teams at their fullest and the best that they can be and not have, like, say, injuries put them out and not put up a stinker of a game for one, but then also give them a bit greater shot to do something here.
Well, yeah, and obviously it depends on the player that they're adding. Bring it back or whatever. So, I mean, and that's the cutoff though, too, is like playoffs. You used to, like last year, you know, postseason kicks in, you can't have anybody return. That's it. Your roster's final. Mm-hmm. Even guys that were like ready, maybe if they're ready, the second round of the playoffs, like, hey, if we get past the first round, we can bring back so-and-so, you know, going to really help us out. Now you can do that. So that's the advantage, is now you're going to be able to bring back whoever it may be to help you possibly win the next round or the current round or what have you.
Mm-hmm. All right, we've got back to the Stone Ages with us again tonight.
Stone Age!
Back to the
What's
Stone
up,
Age.
Bro?
He says, yo, this all sounds like too many nerds trying to get their hands into the NFL pot. And that's, he's talking about probably the voting here for the comeback player of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it is. It ends up being a lot of times. And that's the thing sometimes when you have this excluded, exclusive type of group that gets to vote in things like the Hall of Fame and stuff like that. They hold grudges and stuff. And it's all people in media. And that's the thing, too, because media controls a lot of what goes on and what everybody views and sees and hears and without throughout the world through with everything, not just the NFL, but everything all around us. And they'll tell you what they want you to hear and things like that. So you have to really search wherever to try and find like-minded things or real news that you can develop real opinions about. But these writers, like I said, again, they feel a certain way and stuff. And that's why I think Peter King and Dead came out and was kind of like, this is ridiculous. How do you not do this? And blah. So when his vote feels like it didn't count, he had to go and make a stink wherever he can write about it too as well and speak his mind and part about it. So I think that stuff's pretty hilarious.
Do you know that Peter King is done with everybody? Like he does his own thing
now. You see that now. You see a lot of these guys and ladies as well, especially now that these big conglomerates with ESPN, now NFL Network on top of it too, cutting bait, you know, all these guys and trying to sign these newer guys to cheaper probably contracts here and there.
Absolutely.
But the older style the writers and things like that are out there freelance, and you get to see that. And I think it's really interesting, especially for guys like us and podcasters out there, that really, I think, kind of is an enlightening thing for those guys, you know, as writers and where they've been up at ESPN and all these other things, now able to have a media to go to and stuff like that and other websites and stuff to just have a podcast and still be able to speak your mind and do your things without having, you know, big, you know, the mothership over top of you or whatnot and still get a job and do that type of stuff. I mean, we've seen Diana Rossini still having the contacts and be tight with everybody in the locker rooms or wherever and stuff like that, writing for The Athletic and things and having other podcasts and things. So I think it's a very interesting thing. And I think that's pretty cool with the media, the way that is in a sense that we're all kind of in a big, you know, fishbowl together here now. It's kind of not evening the odds, but everybody's all here together, you know, on the same kind of platform. All right, so Joe. All right, yeah, nothing to say about that. Like,
no,
you don't agree? That's fine. All right, so Joe, that's right. We are the Blindside Blitz. Joe had mentioned there are a bunch of different shows that are on grumblingsmedia.com, also on their YouTube page. Check them all out. We're also on Rumble. So if you follow podcasts like political podcasts, sports like us, entertainment, just go to grumblingsmedia.com. Check them out. There's a bunch there, a bunch of different options. The NBA playoffs just wrapped up. They're talking draft up there too. So it's going to be very exciting to see that. And we just wrapped up an interview with Big John and his big questions, Joe. So that was a lot of fun.
That was
excited to be part of that. I haven't listened to the episode yet, but you guys can also listen to that episode. Just go to Grumblings Media on YouTube and you can watch that episode to learn a little bit more about us, kind of peel back the curtain, Joe,
a
little bit about us.
One real quick thing I want to add to that too is I know sometimes people have trouble commenting or whatever, and it does depend on the format that you're on. So if you're on X, formerly known as Twitter, you have to tap onto the video. I believe it's the title or the actual video, and that'll bring you into the live portion to where you can comment down below. Obviously, it's so easy if you head over to YouTube where you just comment. You know, there's no real issue. But I know some people have been having an issue over at X. So if you guys are still listening or whatever, heading over there, make sure you can drop a comment down there for if you want to be heard or if you want to ask a question, you're free to do so.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, Joe, again, with all the different things going on and gearing up right before camps, like we said, it's kind of slow a little bit.
We're in a lull.
So
we are.
You know, we found an article here. I want to say, I don't know if it was from Bleacher Report. Let me look it up here.
We'll say Bleacher Report.
Yeah, something like that. I saw an article.
It's probably
here.
CBS. I think it was CBS.
It could be CBS Sports. Yes, that's right. And they talked about NFL teams that are failing their rebuild plans. And I thought that was really interesting, too, because we had even touched upon this a little bit, you know, a couple of weeks ago and when we were looking at, you know, biggest questions for some teams and stuff.
Yeah.
And this is part of that whole thing, you know, teams that were in rebuild mode and they're still kind of stuck in limbo right now.
They still suck.
You still suck. So they bring up a handful of teams, and I figured we could just go through a couple of the teams here.
I think they brought in five
or so, something like that. I guess the first one, the obvious choice for them is the Carolina Panthers, Joe.
Yep.
Now, what do you think about this one? Do you agree? And, you know, possibly most likely you do here. But what is it with the Panthers you think that has led to them failing on their rebuild?
I think it's too early to even say that they failed on a rebuild. They haven't even rebuilt the team. Like, they're still in the beginning stages. They just drafted their quarterback in Bryce Young. You know, they're hoping they can further develop him along the way. This upcoming season is the second year. Like, the rebuild just started, literally. The unfortunate part is this season they did lose some players on defense. You know, Frankie Louvu, the big-time linebacker that they have had, the backbone of their defense, he ends up leaving. Also, Brian Burns, a premier pass rusher in this league, he gets traded over to the Giants. You know, so that's another big loss. Like, so they've lost a few key defensive players, and they've kind of replaced them with Jadeveon Clowney. You know, as far as the pass rusher goes, but you're not going to get sacks out of him. He might be able to help you in the run game or create pressure, but that's about it. They've managed to improve on offense now coming into the second year of Bryce Young's tenure. They added some wide receiver depth. They trade up and got Xavier Leggett, who I think the kid could end up becoming a really good receiver in this league. But he has some things to work on. His route running is the one particular thing that he has to get better at. And in the article, they do allude to that where they're like, hey, listen, he's not a finished product. We're going to try to develop him too as we go. And then also they obtained Deontay Johnson, formerly of the Steelers. Crazy thing about him though is even though he's a well-known wide receiver and he's definitely an upgrade over what they had at their disposal, but he hasn't topped 1,000 yards yet since 2021. So it's already been a couple years. This guy still hasn't been able to eclipse that 1,000-yard mark, and you're bringing him there with a very young team that you're still trying to figure things out. So, you know, I hope for the Panthers' sake that it does work out. Other than that, like, I just think that they're so early in their rebuild that I think it's kind of a little bit harsh to say they've failed already.
Yeah, I hear you. I think that's why they're leading to failing. And I think, like you said, they allude to the fact that you trade away DJ Moore. You trade away, you know, your pass rusher.
Well, these are rebuild plans in 2024.
I know. I'm just saying, they've been trying to rebuild for a while, though. You know what I mean? Ever since not having Cam and stuff like that, they really haven't done anything.
Yeah,
you know,
but this is a new regime, new quarterback, like as a year ago. So it's like the rebuild just happened.
No, I hear you. But, I mean, this is why I'm just saying the fact that this team is failing the franchise altogether and why they haven't been able to do this. Just because I think the way the team is run is terrible. You know what I'm saying? And decisions that they've made that led to this. And you're saying even the decision that they made in this past offseason and Brian Burns letting him go, you got to keep a guy like that on your team. And what did you really get out of it? I mean – You have a receiver that you drafted this year that's going to be a project that potentially can lead to something, but you wanted to pack your team with something that would help your quarterback as well, and even having a good defense would be great. But like I said, with mistakes from former you know, years and stuff like that have just compacted on top of this team, and that's why your team's so bad, and you're left with just old, aging free agents at this point.
I don't see it, because this is a new rebuild right now. New regime, new GM. Dan Morgan is now the new GM. You know, David Tepper is still a young type of owner, but he's still trying to figure things out. Dan Morgan, and then you have the brand new head coach now. You got, so you have Dan Morgan and Dave Canales, who are new. They are part of this new regime, and they're going to work with the young players that they have currently and looking to rebuild after. So I think it's a little harsh to have them even on this list, a little premature, actually.
All right, so let's move on next to the Denver Broncos. Now, what do you think about the Broncos in this one? And again, if you're going from only just this offseason, I mean, what are you rebuilding from? I mean, because then, I mean –
Well, here's where this is interesting. So they put the Broncos on here, and part of it is the Russell Wilson deal. Like, this guy was brought in to be the savior under the same current coach, you know, Sean Payton, who's an offensive genius in a lot of circles. Everybody views him as that. Said he can take anybody and make them great. Well, here is your chance with Russell Wilson, and it didn't work out too well for him. There was so much animosity between those two guys that it just was destined not to work. Sean Payton was like, oh, I didn't want you in the first place. You know what I mean? It just created this divide between the two, and they just never could get on the same page. So with as brash as Sean Payton was this past season leading into this year, and the knee-jerk reaction for Sean Payton saying, I can't work with this quarterback. Mind you, Russell Wilson, second half of the year, played really good football as a quarterback for the Broncos. So with that being said, this is a very, very poor decision by Sean Payton, saying that he just can't work with him. It's time to move on from him. He needs his own guy that he wants to choose. And, okay, you move on from Russell Wilson, bad decision, but, hey, he's gone now. But guess what? Financially, that contract is sticking around for another couple years. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of money you're still paying the man. He's not playing for you. And that, to me, is a very critical and terrible decision to make just for emotional reasons. It couldn't have been X's and O's, because he was actually executing in the second half of the year. He had great numbers in the second half of the year. And then you look at the rest of that team. That team is still rebuilding. Like, they are also a team that hasn't found their way, and they keep going quarterback to quarterback to quarterback to quarterback and still haven't found the right guy. Since Peyton Manning left, you know, they just haven't been able to find the right head coach, the right GM, the right quarterback, and surround the quarterback with talent. They can't seem to go in spurts where the defense has been kind of historically always good. They've always seemed to have a running back. Mm-hmm. But after that, they struggle with everything else. And mind you, too, Sean Payton also said it was okay to move on from Jerry Jeudy, a young, promising wide receiver. Yes, don't get me wrong. He has been injury-riddled, for sure. Mm-hmm. But when he's there, he's a difference maker. He makes plays happen. You send him off to Cleveland. So it's like, to me, the Broncos, like the Panthers, the reason why I was saying the Panthers are still too early because they're so young and they got that whole new regime. Sean Payton has been here a couple of years now, made a very rash decision on moving on from a veteran quarterback, let alone Jerry Jeudy, up-and-coming wide receiver. And then now you look at this roster and you're like, well, what are we doing this year? We're going to compete. We're going to compete with a rookie. That's even better. We don't know how good this kid's going to turn out, Bo Nix. Or maybe it might be Zach Wilson that beats him out. Because there's reports there that are kind of conflicting a little bit. They're saying Zach Wilson's actually got the lead right now going into training camp. And will Sean Payton be able to make this work now? Because, hey, you chose to sign Zach Wilson. You chose to draft Bo Nix. Now it's up to you, bro. Like, are you going to be able to turn this thing around and at least show, not saying that they're going to be able to compete for the division, but you have to show progress. You made that decision to move on from Russell Wilson and Jerry Jeudy, and Cortland Sutton's not happy. He wants a brand new deal, and that thing is a little bit rocky right now. So a lot of turmoil behind closed doors, a lot of, I think, poor decision-making. So I think the Broncos do deserve to be on this list coming into this year.
Yeah, and like you said, even the fact, you know, and like in the article, they point out the whole that they couldn't get along with Russell Wilson and things like that, and that's partially some of this here. But you also added the fact, again, the way this franchise has acted, and that's kind of like what I was going with even the way the Panthers have been. You said they haven't had anything since Peyton Manning, and even then, they bought a quarterback to get them the Super Bowl.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
they drafted many times.
By the way, who was the GM? The GM at that time?
John Elway.
So, I mean, Mister, I can't draft a quarterback to save my life, even though I am one.
yes, and that's what I mean. And that's why I mean when you see some of these teams, not all of them, but a couple of these, you know, you look at it and you're like, just, you know, not run well organizations, you know, a lot of times.
Right.
And this is what happens. And when you get desperate for things, this is what you do. So this is why you had that Nathaniel Hackett try to lure in, you know, your Aaron Rodgers didn't work. He didn't do so well. And then you got Sean Payton. You're like, oh, this guy's got to be able to fix it. He starts talking shit about Nathaniel Hackett.
Right.
And then they look terrible last year. So, I mean, you have egg on your face or whatever. He's like, dude, I'm getting embarrassed. I need to pin it on somebody. I'm going to pin it on the offensive coordinator.
Right.
I'm going to pin it on Russell Wilson then, too. You know, you're fired. And, you know, Jerry Jeudy, you're injured all the time, whatever. I can do it with less even at this point. Less is more for me right now. And what it is Russell Wilson's too far old in this. He can't listen to me, and I can't mold him the way I want him to be. So I'm going to draft my guy here, and I'm going to mold him the way I want. I'm going to have my next Drew Brees, and then he's going to be just like me. You know what I'm saying?
Funny thing
and
is.
This is what he's trying to do, and they put all their eggs in this basket, and that's what you're saying. It's make or break in this one, because either the Broncos, for one, can look terrible. And same thing with Sean Payton. That's why I even asked about it. And it is kind of preposterous, but you got to kind of throw it out there and ask the question, you know, what does this do for Sean Payton as a, you know, head coach and his legacy and stuff like that? If he's not able to fix the Broncos here, Drew Brees?
The funny thing is Drew Brees wasn't a young rookie or anything like that.
No.
So it's not like you were molding Brees either.
Mm-hmm.
Brees came over. Brees was already a really good quarterback in the league. And, yeah, he had that crazy shoulder elbow surgery. You know, and people didn't think he was going to be able to throw a ball again. Like, talk about comeback player of the year, right? We're talking about Drew Brees in that situation where he came to the Saints, they cleared him, and all of a sudden history was made with the Saints, you know, won a Super Bowl. So already a vet, though. Like, you didn't mold him. So, like, for him to make kind of like that statement or that kind of conversation to be known about how I want to mold a quarterback, when have you molded a quarterback to be a winner? Never.
Yeah.
So, okay, you got your wish now. You kicked out the vet that you had who has been there, done that before, knows the nuances of how to be a pro in this league, and now you're starting fresh. You got a young quarterback in Zach Wilson. You got a rookie who hasn't even touched a blade of grass yet, you know, during the regular season, you know, in Bo Nix. Let's see you mold these guys, because neither one is a finished product still. So, That to me is going to be the most interesting part of the Broncos season, is watching to see if there's any improvement, especially offensively.
Mm-hmm. All right. And next up on their list here about the failed rebuild is the New England Patriots. And again, we got to bring up past experiences here. And ever since Tom Brady left, you know, that's what they've been trying to do. They've been trying to get back to the promised land, back to, you know, what they were.
Right.
And now it failed miserably with the failed attempts of trying to figure out who's going to play offensive coordinator. Hey, let's have the defensive, you know, minded, you know, coach play, you know, pick all the plays. That's a great freaking idea. You know what I'm saying?
Right?
So Bill Belichick's out now. So, I mean, like you said, there's going to be a different regime here. So we're going to see a different feel and give kind of like maybe, you know, pass for these guys this season, because you got to see what they're doing, because no more Mac Jones. They've given up on that project, you know, and they're moving forward here now with Drake May. And, you know, they bring in the vet, you know, Jacoby Brissett and stuff to try and get things going, steer the ship. But, so, I mean, they kind of get a pass, I think, in a sense, but they truly have failed. And so that's why people have kind of questioned, was it Bill Belichick or was it Tom Brady in this whole thing and had success? And I really love Tom Brady's Hall of Fame speech, by the way.
Yeah,
inducted into the Patriots Hall of Fame speech. And, you know, I thought he would be one of these guys that I liked more when he's not playing. After retirement, because we saw it kind of with this guy, and everybody's kind of said, like, dude, he's just a likable dude. He's really a good dude, and I can see that. He's very relatable. He's just a very harsh competitor, and that's what you saw on the field all the time, too, why you really love to hate him, too, especially when you add all the things you're hearing about cheating and all this other stuff. It just made it worse. But what he's preaching out there, what he said on the podium, and even what he said about Bill Belichick and he, that it wasn't him, it wasn't me, it was us together. I mean, the right things. And ever since then, though, they've been struggling and have not found the way.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting you bring up Tom Brady because, like, I didn't like him in his younger years. He came across, yes, he was always passionate, always, like, you know, gung-ho and all about football. And I love that. I love that that intensity in a player, that passion that he had. But what I didn't like is the fact that, like, he came off real cocky. You know what I mean? Because they were winning all the time, and he was just, like, basically nonstop. Basically, he could literally tell you the play if you're on defense, and he's still going to make you look stupid. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that part really bothered me. But as he got older, you saw him change little. Not the passion, not the intensity that was always there, but that cockiness turned into, like, professionalism, where he's like, I know I'm great. I don't need to boast about it anymore. I can just do what I got to do. And that's where I started to like him a little bit better. But anyway, getting back to the Patriots here, I this is like one of those things where, like, they threw this team in here, and it's like going into 2024, it's a new regime. They finally decided to move on from Belichick. They finally decided to move on from all the old coaches that were there for so long and said, hey, we got to shake things up. Maybe we get a little bit more modern. That's what I'm curious about with this new regime is I don't know what this offense is going to look like. I don't know what this the defense is pretty much going to be kind of the same. It'll be similar, but it's going to be in Gerard Mayo's vision. You know, Belichick taught him well. Now it's like, does he make any tweaks now that Belichick is gone? That's going to be interesting to watch. But offensively is going to be the most interesting part of that team, where it's an open book. You know, I'm curious to see, do they go to, like, you know, a balanced offense? Do they do more power running and then kind of play off the run? And so it'll be interesting to see on that part. But this is a whole new regime, new head coach. Mm-hmm. You know, everything is new now. They drafted their supposed future quarterback in Drake May, which, yes, he needs a little bit of tweaking, needs a little bit of work just like everybody else. But if they can hone his skills in, I'm telling you, this kid's going to be deadly. He will be the future if he develops correctly and is coached well, which that's what we're anticipating. So I think this is a little early for me. Like, they just made this transition now with Belichick being gone, going into 2024. Let's see how this regime rebuilds their team and their vision. So I think it's
early. And like you said, they're still kind of even rebuilding. I mean, they have a lot of young players here, too. And
a lot of different players, yeah.
We didn't get to see a lot of Christian Gonzalez, though, too. So we get to see really
what we saw enough.
Do, you know.
We saw enough.
We saw enough, definitely.
That dude is going to be awesome.
Well, he is. Well, that's what I'm saying. They didn't have him long enough.
Comeback player of the year. Yeah. Right there. Yeah, Christian Gonzalez.
It could be. You know, we'll just call it right now. No, how about that? We're right by that. Boom, there it is. Stamp it. It's down. Cole Strange. How about comeback player?
I'm not going that far. No. All right. Can't do it.
But yeah, you know, we've seen this with this team. They've never been really built on a lot of different, you know, big playmakers. They just learned by the Patriot way. We'll see if that translates with Gerard Mayo here.
Now it's going to be the Mayo way.
The Mayo way. Ooh, I like that, man. You should tell him about that. He should totally freaking.
I'm getting shirts made up, guys. All you Patriots fans out there, it's going to be the Mayo way.
The Mayo way. Oh, man. That just rolls off the tongue.
I'm a marketing genius, Jim.
You are. I don't know if I told you that. That is amazing. I love that. All right. So, but yeah, the Patriots, they haven't, but again, I'm kind of giving a pass. I mean, you know, I hate, you know, what we talked about, you know, with that interview too, with John too, which you guys have to check out on Grumblings Media. We talked about, you know, the teams you maybe root for. I'm just kind of open now, too, because I like certain storylines, and I like to follow them, and I like to see and root for certain things. So
right.
Now that I can't hate the Patriots anymore because Tom Brady's not in there and they're not winning all the time. I'm kind of interested to see how they turn out with this. So I really like Drake May, so I want to see what happens with this team. And if they get better, I don't know if I exactly hate them. You know what I'm saying? Because maybe because you don't have the whole, you know, video gate or whatever, you know, and all this other crap, you know, and deflate gate and things, you know, behind them and, you know, winning championships.
Yeah, that's all.
It's kind of funny, though.
That's over and done with now. But, like, the Patriots as an organization, they have been winning for such a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that there's any love lost between other fan bases. Like, mm-hmm. I think they still want them to lose. They want a lot of other teams' fan bases want them to go mm-hmm. through what some of are still going through.
Yes.
You know, the pain of losing and not being very good. So we'll see how this all shakes out. But I think they have a great situation.
Mm-hmm.
They still got, you know, continuity and stability actually. For that organization with having a coach like Gerard Mayo
mm-hmm.
kind of filling that head coaching role now, who's been there for years under the tutelage of Belichick. And then he has like-minded views, but I'm interested to see the tweaks and the changes that are made going forward for this organization.
All right, next up they've got the New Orleans Saints, Joe. What do you think Ooh. About this one? Because, again, I mean – I feel like now, as we go through these lists, I feel like we have to come up with our own list again. Because I don't know. Because I don't really see the Saints as a rebuilder. Yes, they have to kind of do something different since Sean Payton has left. Dennis Allen kind of picking up, you know, where it kind of left off. So he's kind of like, Sean Payton got it going. Shit's going to go bad. So he kind of left and he's like, left him holding the bag of money.
Right.
He kind of like, here you go. He's like,
he definitely did.
Him out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And got out of that whole, you know, contract or whatever. And now he's with the Broncos. So Dennis Allen's left there, defensive mind coach, and has to figure out how to get this team back to, you know, the success that they've had. And again, I think this team kind of gets treated unfairly with this whole type of, you know, rebuild. I mean, last year, I think they even had, did they go 9-8 or something like that last year? I want to say they were right there knocking on the door to get into the playoffs again, or at least take the division again, despite starting off kind of rocky and Derek Carr constantly getting dogged nonstop. And what weapons did you have? You know what I'm saying?
Well, they had a few weapons, but the problem was protection.
Mm-hmm.
Their car had no time.
Yeah.
There was like it was almost it's like true. There was no tackles there. It was like there
yet
was a, there was
put
two
up
guards
really
in the
good
center.
Numbers again last season.
They were terrible. Yeah, mm-hmm. but that's the thing is Carr has overcome very bad football and very bad personnel around him mm-hmm. and still pulls off wins and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you know, you think about Rashid Shaheed was there.
Mm-hmm.
He started to come up and mm-hmm. make big time plays. Chris Olave, obviously everybody knows that name. You know, and then Juwan Johnson came on later in the year because he was still going through an injury. Like, they had players. They had potential. Kamara was in and out of the lineup the whole season.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so if you're going to pin this on Derek Carr, you're sadly mistaken. This is what bothers me completely about Saints fans. The majority of Saints fans are led to believe that it's all Carr's fault because he's the new guy in town, that we got to point the blame at somebody. It's got to be him. How about – no. After Drew Brees left, this is the best thing that ever happened to you. This guy is actually helping to pull off wins with not a lot of protection at all, let alone he's throwing to Rashid Shaheed and Chris Olave, and half the time Chris Olave is disinterested and doesn't even run his route all the way. So it's like there's been variables throughout the year. And by the way, Pete Carmichael as offensive coordinator, atrocious. That's the best thing that the Saints did this offseason was fire him
mm-hmm.
and start over. So with all that being said,
mm-hmm.
Carr's not the problem. What it is you need to keep building that offensive line. And they did that this draft. They were lucky to draft Talese mm-hmm. Fulaga, who I envision locking down that right tackle spot because there were rumors about Ryan Ramczyk retiring. And I'm like, okay, this is a smart move. They get Talese Fulaga, they can insert him. Ryan can retire if he wants to, but no, Ryan decides to sign an extension, and then they move Talese to left tackle. Now, I don't know how that's going to work out, because he's never played left side for at all.
Sit down.
So, but anyway, he's got to be better than anybody that they had on that left side. Even if he does screw up, he'll still look better. But this team, I have a hard time with this article because it is about in 2024, this rebuild failing in 2024. But this rebuild has been happening for the last 5 years. And they haven't had that answer until last season with Derek Carr as a quarterback. That's really – this team has been talented and has been ready to win, but then they go through injuries and they don't have their quarterback and they keep trying to find the next guy. They give Jameis Winston a shot. That didn't work. It was just one guy after another. Now that they finally have a quarterback that can win, a quarterback that can deliver, now surround him. Get him better protection up front. Get him even an extra wide receiver. You know, they got the A.T. Perry. I think A.T. Perry is another guy to watch out for this year. He could have a breakout year. So this team, I think now they're in a better, much better place than they were the last few years, personnel-wise. But here's the kicker. Next year, guys, 2025, the New Orleans Saints are projected to be back in salary cap hell. $99.5 million over the cap.
That is one big pile of shit.
I mean, the financial department has been failing this team miserably. They seem to keep crawling out of it. Like, even this past year, they had to crawl out of a $60 million over the cap hike. Now, you're going into next year with a near $100 million over the cap. So, I don't know what they're going to do about contracts. I don't know what contracts come off the roster or whatnot. But man, they got a lot of work to do going forward. And I think coming into this year, I hate to say deem them as a failed rebuild, but it's looking like that because under Dennis Allen's tutelage, who's been there for quite some time, I think the bell's about to toll this season. If you didn't get results, if you don't make the playoffs, I definitely see Dennis Allen getting fired.
Yeah, and that's what they've talked about, even too. Hot seat, Derek Carr, Dennis Allen, they're tied together.
We talked about it, too.
I can see where you're coming from here, too. And like you said, that's kind of strapped them, the terrible contracts that they've had in some of these
crazy
players. Cam Jordan, again, too, maybe he'll be off the books by then. Not sure. He's older.
Marshawn Lattimore.
Marshawn Lattimore. In this article, they bring up the fact that they don't like the fact that they re-signed Tyrann Mathieu here, you know, an aging safety. But,
yeah, why?
But I don't know. I kind of see it as like he's decent back there, I guess. But but I'm just saying, like, what are you going to do, though? Because even trying to get free agent safeties right now, they're looking for top money, too. When we talked about it last week with the salary caps, not only on quarterbacks, but other positions that aren't as big as quarterbacks. Some of these safeties now are making top money. I mean, that's kind of ridiculous, you know, for
that
position.
I mean, there was some bargains, though.
I know, I hear you there, but, you know, keeping somebody there, you got a couple void years, and bringing in Willie Gay, which I really like, and Chase Young could do something with that. Those guys are familiar with each other, so maybe Chase Young, if he decides to work the whole season, could do something here,
you
know. This is his only shot, you know, the way I look at it, too. I mean,
he's too young.
I'm just saying he's, you know, the Commanders moved on from him. You know, yes, he was able to get to the Chiefs and kind of jump that bandwagon a little bit.
So he was on the 49ers.
The 49ers, sorry, 49ers here.
But listen, they were only one-year deals.
He's like on the Jadeveon Clowney train right
now. The end of his rookie deal, the Niners let him go, right? Yeah. He signs a one-year deal now with the Saints. Mm-hmm. Like, it was with Washington, I should say that. Originally was with Washington. Signed a one-year deal with the 49ers. You know, and now with the Saints – he's only 25 years old, believe it or not. Like, it's to me, it seems like he's been in the league for 10 years, but he's only 25. But every team gives him a one-year deal because of the injury concerns. Now, if he can prove this year that he stays healthy, let's just say he has about 8 sacks, you know, and plays well, he's going to set himself up for a big contract, but not with the Saints because they got a lot of money to get rid of. Now, I don't know if they could pull that off, but – he could make himself finally a long-term type of contract, maybe a 5-year deal, 4-year deal, whatever. But yeah, you're right.
Yeah, like, that's what
This is part of like the stop. It's a pit stop for Chase Young to prove to everybody in the NFL that, listen, I can stay healthy and be productive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you talk about Jadeveon Clowney again, this is why I think, again, with the Panthers why they're either desperate too, or you know, people were saying about
Brian Burns.
They just traded Brian Burns, but you bring Jadeveon Clowney in and you sign a multi-year deal with him, not another 1 year deal. You know what I mean?
So it's a 2 year deal.
I hear you, but I mean, again, you know, whereas others have even passed on the whole thing. But Chase Young, like you said, this is where you hope. Yes, you better work hard and you better get it done here. Show us what you were back in your rookie season.
How about back in college?
And then you can. Well, that's fine too. But you know. Extend your, you know, your career, you know, because you are still young. You have a lot to show, and you can have a lot to offer other teams. Mm-hmm. And like I said, even for the Saints, if not the Saints, somebody else, that could be very good. And if people get him, you know, now getting back to, you know, into his prime possibly, or just, you know, a good player at a cheaper rate, at least at this point.
He won't be cheap.
He's young at this point right now.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is that. But again, if he lands it this season and just balls out,
mm-hmm.
he's getting a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
He's a young up and coming pass rusher who always has had the talent. It's always been there. We've seen spurts of it, but then he ends up getting hurt again. You know, and that's kind of the big caveat of it all is that just needs to stay healthy, and we'll see what he can do if he does. I hope he does stay healthy because I'm curious to see what he can do with a full season.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. So again, like you said, attacked the offensive line, did a little bit on defense here, and they were still in it last season. So when people and I are talking about, you know, with, you know, Hard Knocks now going to be with the AFC North, and there's going to be interesting because, you know, that division last year had every team make the playoffs. This division I thought has been tight for a while now with the NFC South, and I think it's going to get even more interesting this year. Now you have Kirk Cousins there too, as well with Baker Mayfield, and now you know Derek Carr and the Saints. You know Kyler Murray coming back healthy with a Marvin Harrison Jr. So this is a division I think that could be very interesting to watch as well in the NFC picture. So
yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm. So it'd be interesting to see what they end up doing.
But you know what, Jim? It's weird too. It's like you bring up this division that is also interesting, and you're right. But every division, it seems like in the NFL right now, is interesting. For the first time, you know, last year we weren't really sure. This year, everybody got better. And every division, you can make an argument, every division is somewhat interesting because of different players, younger players coming up, like. I feel like we're in store for an epic NFL season.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. Here now. Lastly, on this list,
the G-Man.
I've got my New York Football Giants again. And you talk about rebuild. Yeah. I mean, it's been rebuilding for a while again, though. Too. I mean, but what's kind of funny with the Giants again? When you look at franchises like the Steelers and the longevity of their head coach and things like that and what they've done with Mike Tomlin. Everybody was so quick even to get Tom Coughlin to move on and this and those losing years that they had.
Yep.
And McAdoo, let's get him. But then all of a sudden he had a year and a half and done. They moved on from Spags. And look what Spags is doing with the Chiefs now. I mean, his career is launched into a whole nother level now too as defensive coordinator. He's one of the best now, I think, you know, in the league, you know, at this point, you know, what the Chiefs have been able to do and what he's done with them on the defensive side. But if they only maybe held on to him a little longer, maybe we'd be able to see something you know, with the Giants and moving forward. Sort of like now what we're hoping that's your Raiders would be able to do possibly. Again, struggling for coaches, players, things like that. Even drafting high, but then missing on players. You know, and the Giants now question still for you know Daniel Jones. They finally have a wide receiver weapon. It looks like so. We're excited to see what happens with there. But all in all, it has failed, and they've failed for a very long time. And ownership has gone along with the ship, I think, as well.
I'm going to pull back on that a little bit because this article, for one, is their whole idea was going into 2024 failed rebuild, right? So the Giants, you got to think of it this way too, is there was an absolute disaster that you know, Daboll came into. There was no receivers. There was no protection up front. They had Saquon already there. They had, you know, they have Daniel Jones. That's all he has to work with on offense. That's it. There's nothing to work with.
Right.
And you, it's going to take time. It's going to take probably 4 or 5 years total since he took over to kind of start to see any kind of remnants of it getting better. And with Joel Shane now as the GM, at least he's making smart decisions. He brought in, just think about it, this team from where it was to now, you have to admit that it is better on paper. Like the personnel is definitely better. Like the offensive line, they brought in some veterans. That's going to shore that up this year. They drafted Malik Nabers this offseason. You know, finally got a number one wide receiver to throw to. They managed to bring in some vets. You know, I think that some regimes take longer to fix than others because some regimes just don't have all that, like half the talent that other teams do. So I think that the Giants are making the right decisions so far, and you're going to see a better product on the football field this year because they're finally starting to get to add high talented individuals to that offense. The defense is going to be different, so I'm kind of don't know what that's going to look like, you know, scheme wise. But again, they got Brian Burns. They're going to tag. They're going to have Thibodeau on one side, Burns on the other, with Dexter Lawrence in the middle. Like, dude, that is a really good D line. That could be one of the most D lines most feared in that division.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't know what the rest of the scheme is going to look like. But they do have talent already on that side of the ball. Now you look at this offense, looks better. Let's see if they can execute. Daniel Jones returning. I don't think this is a failed, you know, I don't think this is the end result yet. I don't think it's a failed rebuild just yet. Now, it takes a turn for the worse, and despite the changes and the drafting and the decisions that they've made up to this point, all of a sudden the train falls off the rails. All right, then we can call it a failed rebuild. But right now they're still building momentum.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that, I guess, too, by some of the differences and the changes they have made. Last year was very strange, again, because you're coming off a year that looked pretty good for you, and then all of a sudden you're just laying out stinkers, getting demolished by some people that you really should have beaten already. And that's what you mean. You look at the team on paper and it looked okay, because I've been looking at it and I'm like, oh, cool, Darren Waller on top of these guys, and this is going to be cool and blah, blah. And it never really turned out. You're like, oh, man, this guy didn't even do nothing. And this
sat out all the time.
Yeah, and then that's I'm trying to think of. It just seemed like there's so many different injuries. And, yes, every team has injuries, but it seemed like every other – in a week, somebody else was going, and you never had the same wide receiver core on the field too, as well. On top of it, in that offensive line, to boot, you
and
know,
you didn't and have your starting quarterback
so much that even Andrew Thomas was injured multiple weeks too, and I think even too just resting it extra time to make sure because they knew they had a losing season going. So I mean, I'm always optimistic to see how it looks. And like I said, I like to see what this team could do with the way they are now. I could see possibly something here. Interested, like you said, to see what this defense is going to be like now that there's no more Wink Martindale and they've got, you know, some younger talent in the corner, you know, secondary positions.
I'm curious to see a bounce back year for Deontay Banks, the corner.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping we can definitely have here too.
You got to remember too.
And Mike.
Wide receivers, corners. Those type of positions, a lot of times, more times than not, they don't come in and just say, hey, I'm here. You know, I'm going to have a breakout year in my rookie year and just shut everybody down or catch everything over people's heads. Some players, it takes a year or two to kind of really get back in the swing of things, especially at this level. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think this year you're going to see something from Banks unlike his rookie year.
Yeah, I mean, and he got a lot of like unsung heroes, I think, with this team, like Okereke. I think that was somebody that a lot of people kind of
he's really good.
Was anything, and he was kind of a nice signing here. And even Micah McFadden, I think, was one of those ball chasers was all over the field, and then he suffered injuries, and now you saw the effect that had not having him in the games made even for this team, because he was even a major run stopper for them, you know. So healthier on defense here, on offense, got some weapons. Again, wide receiving core, though, I'm kind of unsure about where they are, where they lay. That's one thing I'm anticipating in the camps to kind of see who's going to be that number two spot with Malik Nabers and things like that. Just because you got the question marks of, Darius Slayton again. You know, what guy are you?
I think he's the fourth receiver.
Well, I don't know. Even our last has a penciled in as number two.
No, he ain't going to win that job.
Yeah, and that's why I'm hoping that Hyatt can be, that number two. Or you got Allen Robinson right there, too. I mean, see what you can get out of that. Yeah, I think
those two names are just two out of the three guys that I'm thinking of.
Mm-hmm.
You also got the other kid. I'm drawing a blank right now, the shorter wide receiver. I think it was number
Isaiah McKenzie or who? Wandale Robinson.
Wandale Robinson. Yeah. Yep. Isaiah McKenzie's like 300 years old.
Yeah, I know.
Like, no, I like that young kid though. Like, yeah. I think he's going to be a problem in the slot. Mm-hmm. I think he could easily win that job in the slot, and I think that Jalin Hyatt is going to take yet another big step this year. I think he's gonna shake some things up in that receiver room, because training camp is when people are fighting for jobs, and that's where you're gonna see him shine.
Right, and especially if Malik Nabers gets off to a kind of a hot start,
he's gonna be good,
people
bro.
Are gonna look for that, and then say you can draw that safety to Nabers, that leaves Hyatt a burner, on wide open on the other side. Safety's got to choose one, so I think they could definitely capitalize on that. But I could see, again, though, what they're talking about with them being, a failure so far. I think I could see that. But, moving forward, I hope for the best, this season. So that's the thing with some of these teams. They're kind of like they haven't done much since, their glory days or whatever, it might have been. But they are working at trying to do something.
I just think they're picking teams that – are on the cusp of something. It's one thing if the team has been bad for so long, it's like, all right, well, this team going into 2024 has definitely screwed up everything. But it's almost like almost every team that they picked is like, well, they're on the verge of being good. They're on the verge of getting better. So it's like, I just think it was a poor decision on the teams that they selected to kind of bring that argument up, because a lot of them are either got brand new regimes, new quarterbacks, Like, things are starting to change over to where I think that argument is a little too premature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear you there. So there you go. That's the
Jim? What's not premature?
What's that?
Is if people that are tuning into our show could do us a huge favor, head over to YouTube, go to Grumblings Media right there, that channel right there, hit that subscribe button. It's so easy. And guess what?
It is.
I get limited time only. It's absolutely free. That's right. Get over there. Hit that subscribe button for free. Hit the notification bell and put it on all notifications to get all the great podcasts that we have at your disposal. Anything from political, entertainment, sports, you name it, it's there. Go to grumblingsmedia.com. Also, you can head over to rumble.com if you're feeling adventurous. And also, anywhere we get your podcasts, Apple, Google, Spotify, Pandora, you name it, we're going to be there. Hey, not just there. We're here for you guys, the NFL fans out there. Every single week, Tuesday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern. That's what it's all about, baby. Let's go.
Yeah, absolutely. So thanks a lot so much for joining us tonight. We really appreciate it. Like Joe said, we got a lot to talk about this upcoming, off-season camp starting and all that stuff.
We
got some special guests coming up too. So you guys can type for that, definitely.
I got it. I'm not going to say who it is, what I'm going to tell you guys is – if you need help with your fantasy football.
Ooh, I was just going to say that.
Great minds think alike. Mm,
that's right.
But if you love fantasy football, if you're gearing up and can't wait to draft, we're going to help you along the way. So make sure you tune in here.
Mm-hmm.
We're approaching that real close hot spot of fantasy football leagues and everything. So we're going to get you right. We got some big time professionals coming in that can help you win your league this year and every year going forward.
Absolutely. So thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you guys for the Blitz next.